May it please the court, Mr. Berkowitz. In this case, respondent is a 79-year-old attorney who currently practices law in St. Louis, Missouri. He's practiced law for 54 years, and his practice consists of personal injury, traffic, and general litigation cases. Respondent has no disciplinary history, with the exception of a troublesome pattern of mishandling his trust account. Since 2010, when this court began requiring banks holding trust accounts to notify the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel when one of those trust accounts becomes overdrafted, respondent has been the subject of four such reports. The first three overdraft reports occurred in 2010, 2012, and 2013, and resulted in investigative audits by the OCDC. Those audits reflected that respondent was in the practice of leaving his personal funds in the trust account and paying personal expenses out of funds in that trust account. Informant was unable to establish whose funds were used to pay these personal expenses because respondent's record keeping was so disorganized. Informant, however, did determine that no client or third party funds had been used and no clients or third parties were harmed. Informant initially cautioned respondent for the misuse of his trust account and ultimately admonished him. After each overdraft, the OCDC also directed respondent to take various remedial actions to educate himself on the proper use of the trust account, including a thorough review of the 2013 amendments to the trust account rules, a review of the Missouri Bar's and IOLTA's accounting manual, attendance at a CLE focusing on the basics of trust accounting, and he was admonished to maintain adequate records, to make timely deposits into his trust account, and to avoid commingling.
But you didn't monitor that to make sure he did that.
We only monitored it in that he successively received the overdrafts over the coming years. We did not monitor that whether or not he had actually taken those steps, Judge Teilman. Each time a new overdraft came in, we inquired as to whether he had in fact done what we had asked him to do or directed him to do, and in fact he had not done so.
But with an admonishment as opposed to a reprimand, there's not a probation where you can impose conditions?
No, we don't have admonishment with conditions of any type, but we did, as a means to get him back on course, direct him to take certain actions, which he did fail to take at any time.
But you have no ability to put to recommend probation so that his record keeping would be in conformity with the standard accounting principles?
We certainly have the authority to enter into a diversion agreement with an attorney under Rule 5, Judge Teitelman. However, in cases such as involving trust account violations, you know, those are potentially serious, they are serious violations. We don't believe that diversion generally is going to be adequate. We would generally bring those cases up here for our probation if we deemed it appropriate. In this case, the types of things he was doing, premature disbursement from a trust account, which resulted in the first overdraft, having excessive personal funds in the trust account and then using those personal funds to pay personal expenses out of the trust account were the type of thing that we thought could be cautioned, admonished, and educated to get him to a backline course.
But at the moment you saw that his accounting and his bookkeeping was a mess, you have no opportunity to do anything to correct that situation?
Well, I will tell you that our investigative person, our paralegal, goes to great lengths to get people back on track. She doesn't simply audit a trust account. She will give assistance, and she gave extensive assistance in this case in terms of giving directives, and you can find those in the caution letters, in the admonition. He was directed at each step to take a CLE, to get the training he needed to read.
But you don't test him on it nor follow up on whether or not he actually, I mean, there's no test to say, well, you sat there and read the Wall Street Journal or you read.
We do not, and in most cases, we don't have this type of recurrence. We don't hear back from people because they do take the steps that we direct them to take. They learn the proper methods to follow. In this case, it just didn't happen.
Was it a continuation after those? The admonishment of the same activity, or did it become more serious?
In our view, it became more serious. It was a continuation, but then in April of 2014, respondent deposits two checks from a settlement on behalf of his clients, the Yanukovychs, into his trust account. He immediately makes...
Was that just a matter of not getting the signature? Had the signature been given, would everything have been okay?
Well, here's what happens. The checks bounce because he doesn't get the checks properly endorsed. Because of that notice that comes to us of an overdraft, we again audit the account and we discover other problems with the way those funds were dispersed from the trust
account.
Was it
a premature disbursement again?
In this case, the initial problem that caused the overdraft was a premature disbursement. Within 3 days after depositing that check, he's bounced three checks out of the trust account, two to his client and one to himself for his fees.
It's not self-dealing or anything else, though. It's a question of those checks not clearing because they weren't countersigned.
Well, that's what brought it to our attention. But our subsequent investigation showed that he was, again, using money in that account to pay his personal expenses, his water bill, his gas bill. He made a payment to his son.
And was it personal money or client money? He was using
We believed it was, for the most part, personal money, frankly. But then what happens is in June of 2014, he's got sufficient money in his account, $6,895 to pay the balance of his attorney's fees owed to himself, as well as an expert a medical bill owed to a Dr. Donald Brust in the amount of $4,606. He's got sufficient funds in that account to make those payments. In August of 2014, he begins making disbursements to himself through checks from the trust account, as well as counter withdrawals. Goes to a bank, gets a withdrawal slip, and makes a withdrawal from the account. By September 10th of 2014, the trust account balance has fallen to $3,376, less than the amount necessary to pay Dr. Brust. And that's where we believe he's now dipped into money belonging to either the clients, the Inikoviches, or Dr. Brust, to make a payment to himself. Now, I will tell you that with his brief, the respondent has filed an affidavit from Dr. Brust in a supplemental appendix. That's fine. We have no objection, in which Dr. Brust says, I was paid by Mr. Lander. But the problem with that is it really doesn't answer the question. All it says is, I got paid my $4,606. It doesn't say when he got paid, and it doesn't say what the source of those funds were.
Mr. Pratzel, in addition to the point that you're just making, is the fact that you had the prior admissions and tried to do everything you would have done for him if he was on probation one of the reasons why you do not recommend probation in this case?
Yes. I mean, honestly, Judge, we have gone to great lengths to try to educate the respondent. If it were, you know, the panel recommended an indefinite suspension with no leave to apply for reinstatement until after 6 months. Respondents asking for probation. We've had limited success in getting him to do what we've directed him to do, and on top of that, we've had limited cooperation, frankly. The panel found a violation of 4-8.1, meaning he didn't cooperate with us. And by the way, that goes beyond, part of it was that we subpoenaed him in for two statements in October and November of 2014. He was a no-show. And in fact, he was a caregiver for his wife who has Alzheimer's and didn't show apparently because of that. But you should know that the lack of cooperation goes way beyond before that those two statements were taken. The fact is we were making requests for documents during these first three overdrafts and getting limited cooperation from him then. He was hanging up on our paralegal. He wasn't able to produce records. In our view, probation, we believe that at least there's enough evidence to support what the panel recommended, which is a suspension.
And when he didn't attend the depositions, did he call and explain why he couldn't attend afterwards?
I'm not sure if he did afterwards, but he didn't do it on that day, or at least during the time that our special representative and the paralegal were in St. Louis for the statement. At least on one of the statements, I believe the attorney tried calling, wasn't able to find out what was going on. And so on those two occasions that he was a no-show and at least based on my understanding of the record, did not take steps at that time to let us know what his issue was. Obviously, if he had a problem with getting someone to care for his wife, we would have rescheduled. It would not have been a problem.
And also, the overdraft charges in 2010, 2012, and 2013, did that result in just one admonition, or was that a series of admonitions and warnings about him reading the rules and attending the CLE?
Right. In March of 2010, the first overdraft resulted in what we call a caution. We now call it guidance. And the fact is that that was a premature disbursement of settlement funds prior to that check becoming good funds. It happens in those kinds of cases. We generally close the case, tell the attorney, don't do that anymore. That's what happened here. But in that case, he was told to read the rules, to go to a CLE. So that's a caution. In November of 2012, he receives a caution for the inadvertent use of trust account for personal expenses. Again, it was his funds, but he had excessive funds in the account that belonged to him and was paying personal expenses out of there. Again, we chose to close that with a caution because we felt that if he would take our directives and learn the proper use of the trust account, he'd be okay. So those are cautions. Finally, in November of 2013, on the third overdraft, he's admonished by our office for continued payment of personal expenses from the trust account and failing to maintain records to even explain what was going on within that trust account. You know, as we all know, when we audit one of these trust accounts, we need more than just bank records. We need client records. We need attorney records to show what was coming in and what was properly going out of that account. He just wasn't able to produce many of those records.
And when you do that, the expenses are borne by the attorney, are they not?
Expenses?
Of the OCDC.
The audit.
They're born. I mean, they're just part of our budget. We don't charge anything back to the attorney for performing our investigation. No. So it's borne by our office to conduct that.
The cost of probation. If you put someone on probation, are those costs borne by the attorney or by you?
If there's a formal action from this court placing the attorney on probation, there's a disciplinary fee that is charged that does help go to the cost of that probation and the actions we need to take to monitor that attorney. So yes, that's a different situation. But when we get an overdraft notice and need to audit that account, that's just part of our investigative responsibility.
Well, you have two functions. One is to discipline and be an adjudicatory prosecutor, but the other function is to protect the public. I remember when I was on the advisory committee, Mr. Ratcliffe went out and he saw a fellow was not doing very well, and again there were some minor things about not giving people, not minor, but to the clients it was important about not giving back their files. But he went out and visited with the attorney and saw the fellow had dementia, and he recommended suspension, interim suspension. Do you have that ability to do that to protect the public? Your goal was to protect the public as well as discipline. Do you have the tools available to you to protect the public?
Well, I think that certainly through a probation, we have the tools to do what we need to do to protect the public through monitoring. And you know, probation does give us those tools through an order of this court. In a case like this, that probation obviously would be fairly extensive in terms of some of the conditions that might be required. But that said, our hope always is that through the directives we give, after we've investigated an overdraft, that the attorney is going to take that seriously, learn the proper way to handle the trust account, and that we never hear from them again. In this case,
and be fair, you and the OCDC have been very effective at correcting practices to protect the public through whatever.
We've had both with diversion, probation, and monitoring. Agreements that we have with new lawyers, we've had great success in not seeing any recidivism. The issue here is, the panel recommended an actual suspension. Respondents asking for probation. You know, my feeling is we're dealing with a 79-year-old lawyer here who seems to be pretty much set in his ways, and I somewhat question whether probation is going to be workable under those under that situation.
But as time goes on, you may have more lawyers. Lawyers are notoriously not retiring from their practices when, in their particular situation, they may be a good court.
Well, and in the end, Judge Teitelman, you know, if you're practicing law, it doesn't matter what age you are.
No, it doesn't.
You have to follow the rules, and the rules of trust accounting are some of the most serious and strenuous rules that exist in Rule 4. And so, yes, the fact is that, these are issues that, you know, I don't think any client or third party was ever out any money because he made good somehow with Dr. Bruss.
I was in private practice for a while, and as my colleague Paul Wilson says, and my friend Zell Fisher, if you put blue files and green files, one are client money, one's your money, if you keep them separate, it's not very, you can't get in too much trouble.
You bet.
Mr. Pretzel, did your office undertake any investigation of his explanation for not attending the depositions or the statements? You've indicated that it appears you accept his role in caring for his wife. Is that?
No, we did not follow up. I mean, we took him at his word, and I have no reason even today to question that that's not absolute fact, that he had an issue with some sort of a person who was supposed to show up to take care of his wife and just didn't show up, and so he was unable to make the statement. I mean, he could have called.
In the course of your investigation, was it focused entirely on the trust account, or did the investigation extend to whether there's a sense of the rest of his practice and whether he's following the rules in the rest of his practice?
No, we only went as far as the audit of the trust account took us. We have no reason to think that there's any other issues with regard to his practice. He has a limited practice, works out of his home. We have no client complaints regarding that practice, so anything that would indicate a need to look beyond what we found through our audits.
Of course, we've been very, very understanding of people who are going through divorces, people that have health problems, and that kind of stuff. So in a situation where his wife has Alzheimer's, that may be one of those situations if he asks for help. I guess that's
well, I mean, I'm not, yeah, when he said that was the case, I didn't second guess that, because why would anyone lie about something like that? I just wouldn't think anyone would do that. So.
Thank you.
You bet.
Good morning. It's been a long morning for all of you, I understand, and I don't know how you keep in your heads all of the issues that have come before you this morning.
We get paid to hear one way or the other.
Well, I admire your efforts here today. And so thank you all, and thank you, Mr. Pratzel, for the work that your agency does as well. You know, may it please the court, I'm here today to ask, I guess in some ways, to ask for forgiveness for Ed Lander. You know, he did, he's guilty of oversights, he's guilty of errors, he's guilty of mistakes. But they're not errors of judgments that have affected any clients. They're not errors of judgments that have been in any way deceitful, and which is what I see more than not when it comes to suspensions and disbarments. He didn't hurt anybody. He did not use client funds.
He didn't follow one of the key issues is he did not follow the rules.
He didn't. He
requirements didn't. Of the OCDC to come to depositions and follow their regulations. Right. Would your probation request deal with those issues?
Yeah, there's no question about it that he did not follow. He didn't follow. Basically, what happened is he didn't follow one of the rules, which is don't write checks to third parties out of your account.
No, that's one thing, but he didn't follow the requests of the OCDC to appear at a deposition.
You know,
and he didn't take the classes and learn how to keep the trust account. He chose not to act on the cautions, and so doesn't that indicate something more serious is needed to get his attention? Because that didn't.
I think this has gotten his attention.
Well,
I think this is pretty serious, and I think it has gotten his attention. And I can tell you personally that he has now learned his lesson for sure. And if you read the hearing and read what his statement in the hearing, he was clearly very, very sorry in the hearing for those things that he had done.
And now, what explanation was there for not taking the classes and learning how to keep a trust account
not reading the rules?
Oh, not reading the rules. You know, I've known Ed for 30 years. He was my partner for 25 of those 30 years, okay? And Ed was the guy that if I had a question or if I had a legal issue to deal with, and Ed wasn't great at even research. I was the researcher guy. Ed would always tell me what he thought the law should be, and he was always right. I would go back and I'd have to actually find the case that says what Ed said. Ed was very good, and there are a lot of lawyers who have a very strong talent for knowing what's right and what's wrong, and what the law is and what the law is going to likely be. And Ed knew enough to know about at least the fact that he shouldn't use trust client money to pay himself. That he knew. And he figured that's what the bar was trying to say to him, don't, or the OCDC was trying to tell him, which is you just can't pay yourself, or you can't use or misappropriate money. He knew not to write those third-party checks. He knew that, and I believe him when he says, the color of the checks were so similar to my other account, and your example of make one blue and make one green, he didn't do that. He should have probably done that. I agree. And the fact that he didn't have great accounting in place, that's fixable, Your Honors. There's nothing that Ed did, Mr. Lander did, I apologize, that shows that he doesn't have a strong character for the bar. He does, he always has. 54 years of practice, and never has he ever been either accused or found guilty of any kind of ethical violation.
But if I had gotten a letter from the Office of Chief Disciplinary Counsel, to me that sounds like the Inquisition. I mean, I do whatever they tell me. I mean,
that was nothing personal, Mr. President.
Nothing personal, but I would do whatever they tell me. I'd say, what else do you want me to do? I mean,
you know,
it certainly gets a wake-up call. I mean, not they ever did. Never got one of those letters.
No, but, you're absolutely right. And what I can say in Mr. Lander's behalf is this: as I was as blown away as he was when Marlene, his wife, came down with Alzheimer's disease, and this is about two and a half years ago. And it was traumatic. It was a shock. He has watched day by day as he's losing his wife every single day. Parts of her are gone. They're gone. And for us to all sit here and go, well, you know, he should have paid more attention to the OCDC.
But there are processes in the system for leniency and for understanding of these issues. I know no one wants to disclose private lives, but there are processes for leniency on the part of OCDC for precisely these kind of situations.
Well, I agree, and that's where I'm here today, because I believe that he's entitled to that after 54 years.
Mr. Berkowitz,
let me ask
I was just going to say, I think we understand, and it's certainly not been suggested by Mr. Pratzel that there was any intent to take money, but what we have to worry about is clients and make sure they're protected.
Absolutely.
But the problem is, and it's raised by what you said, but you may have an answer to it, that if his concern is with his wife and with other matters and they're distracting from the practice, how do we know these problems won't occur again, not on purpose, but because other things are distracting? And that's the concern about probation, that perhaps it will not be enough to ensure that things are done properly.
And I put it in my brief and in his affidavit as well. You know, we don't always know how to deal with that when it happens. And so as his wife is starting to lose memory, starting to lose basically her orientation to things on a periodic basis, you're hoping it goes away. You're hoping that that's not really happening. You deny. I mean, that's just normal. We all do that. And in Mr. Lander's case, he decided, you know what? I'm going to take care of her. I'm just going to take care of her. And he realized that he can't do both. You can't practice law and be a full-time caretaker for your wife. You can't do that. He has, and I put it in my brief, over the last month and a half or so, he's now hired a full-time caretaker, which is a step in the right direction. You know, nursing home is probably another step that will ultimately be in the right direction. But the family could not agree to do that. They wouldn't do it to him. They feel like it's doing something to her, and they would not put her in a nursing home. They have to try for a day, I want you to know. So the problem here is adjusting to the situation and adjusting to his life. And with a full-time...
You're saying he's changed his circumstances so that he's able to deal more directly with his practice?
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And so he now has the time to devote, which isn't a lot of time. I mean, even in the transcript, I think he says he devotes maybe 5 or 6 hours a week to his practice, because it's not a big practice, but he still wants to have that after all these years. He doesn't want it to go down in flames at age 79. He still wants to have the ability to practice. And so that's where probation comes in. Question was asked, Judge Breckenridge, you were asking about looking into anything further that may be happening with his practice. Well, you know, this didn't start with a client complaining about anything. This started, of course, with the trigger, which is the flag. There's an overdraft. The overdraft was caused because of the endorsements that he did not get from his clients initially. Mr. Pratzel refers continually to what he calls a preemptive or premature disbursement of $1,500. Well, the deposit was made on the 29th of April, and it was May 2nd when he took the $1,500 into his own account for his fee, a partial payment for his fee. That's all that was. It wasn't a premature withdrawal.
He did not confirm that the checks had cleared before he paid himself.
He did not, and I don't either, to tell you the truth, although I may be charged for that. I don't know, but I don't.
Just don't get insufficient funds.
That's a great rule. I think the fact is, after 3 days, banks, actually, it's a 24-hour rule, really, with a bank. He had given the Yanukovychs a post-dated check. They deposited it. And between that and the $1,500, and Mr. Lander had no idea that his check, those two settlement checks, didn't clear until the bank let him know on the 8th of May. That's when he found out. It was a
late
notice.
Does he understand now that you must confirm that a check is cleared before you pay?
I learned it from this case, yes, that I need to do that. I would need to make sure that my checks were in order. Because
has he agreed to take a class in trust accounting?
He will take a class in trust accounting. And if there is one to teach him how he needs to do bookkeeping and record keeping, he will do it. He's very sorry.
But does he have a bookkeeper now or someone? Is he still officing with you?
No, he offices at his home now. So
does he have a bookkeeper or an accountant, someone who does his taxes, someone who will look over to make sure that it's not a disorganized situation? If it's 4 or 5 hours a day,
his account has almost nothing in it now. I mean, so it's like the account goes, you know, has a whole lot of money coming through it back and forth.
But as part of probation, you'd have no objection to having someone who would be an expert in this field looking over his accounts to make sure they're done right.
Looking him over and making sure that his record keeping is done properly, which I think all lawyers probably need that, because I think a lot of us, solo practitioners especially, probably need some lessons in making sure our record keeping is proper. And this really is something for the solo practitioner. This is not something big firms have to worry about, because they're not going to overdraft. I mean, they've got enough retainers and everything else going through that they're not going to overdraft. The solo guys.
And if you screw up a large law firm account, they have a remedy. It's called firing you.
Right.
Well, the reason I asked that question was the startling admission that despite the three prior instances, I understand he didn't take the class, but where he said, I haven't read the rule, which seems, I mean, that's very contrary to what we normally see, and that seems almost like a defiance in the face of lots of encouragement to keep himself out of trouble. So that's a red flag.
I hear that, and I agree. I understand what you're saying, and I think, you know, besides the oversights and the negligence, there's a certain level of irreverence that goes with him not reading the rule. I'll also tell you there's a certain amount of honesty that goes with that.
True.
But he's made an act.
Because I'll bet you that a lot of lawyers would, in the face of that question, would say, yes, I read them. Okay? And Mr. Lander was perfectly frank and perfectly honest. And
but he's made an
that's
act
who
of contrition.
Eddie is. What?
He's made an act of contrition. He's apologized. He's confessed his sins. And he's
he has. He has. And he means it. And I know that because I know Eddie.
Well, that's my question with two things. One, you talked about the fact that he merits probation. The other one goes to my relationship with being an old criminal lawyer. Can he make probation? In other words, sometimes telling your client to take the probation is not good advice.
Not a good right.
He's not going to make probation.
Right.
He's going to be back. He's going to do the time. Okay. Mm-hmm. And now, Mr. Pratzel points out the fact that at his age, he's not likely to change his ways. You're making representation that he's going to change his ways and cooperate with OCDC. Now, you know, you're not him, but you represent him. So he's told you he's willing to do whatever OCDC imposes upon him to make probation, and you believe, representing him at this point, he can make probation.
Judge Draper, I appreciate your comment. On one hand, and I forgot all that you said, but mostly what I listened to here was he's too old to change.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a little bit discriminatory? I mean, seriously, if you're old, that means you cannot learn and you cannot change. That is not true. And my wife does elder law. That's all she sees. And people can change and they can do things differently than they've done them. So I know for a fact that's really not a fair statement.
He's not physically or mentally impaired, is he?
He's not.
He's got to be willing, though.
He's got to be willing. But what's really funny about your statement about probation and when you know, dealing with criminal clients, you know who taught me that lesson was Mr. Lander. He said, Ira, there's no point in giving this client SIS because if he messes up, he's in more trouble than what he's going to get today without the SIS.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. That's true. And Mr. Lander taught me that lesson.
Counsel, I know that you said that your client would be willing now to attend some type of CLE regarding the basics of trust accounting, but wasn't he ordered to do so on prior occasions and didn't? And so how can we believe that now he will when he said he would three times before and didn't?
The time at which he was told those things was a terrible time in his life. I mean, I can't overemphasize that. His, you know, the situation with Marlene was devastating, and I can tell you the truth. It's been devastating for me too. I knew her very well when she didn't have Alzheimer's. Losing her day by day is devastating. And Your Honor, I think from this experience, he's learned. He is definitely understands.
We're beyond the
this
point
is
of
business.
We're beyond the point of going to a class. We're at the point where we can require through probation for them to monitor an accountant, someone who looks, and if he doesn't do it right, report back to OCDC
right.
at his expense.
Right. Rather than waiting till he might overdraft by accident or something else, the oversight by the OCDC will know right away if he's doing it right or not. And he will have someone, hopefully, that knows exactly what is required and what he needs to do. And they'll be able to set him up the way.
Does he have an accountant or anyone that does his books now that could?
He does not
play that role. Well, we can require.
He does not,
that.
But we will get someone unless the office of the disciplinary commission wants to, you know, recommend someone or give him somebody. He'll definitely use them. Yeah. But I appreciate all your questions and just let me say that. He didn't do anything to hurt anybody. This was not a situation where a complaint came in and somebody was injured. The case
we have
I've
rules
read,
that need to be followed.
And the rules do need to be followed, and he made mistakes in not following those rules. It's fixable, and it's fixable by Mr. Lander. And I can tell you, after 25 years of practicing with Mr. Lander, he is one of the more ethical attorneys that I know, and he would do nothing to hurt the bar. So thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, let me try to reset the needle here a little bit. First of all, premature disbursement doesn't mean that you deposit a check on the 29th, write checks on the 2nd. Premature disbursement, under the rules, you're required to wait until those funds are good funds. It could take two weeks of business days before that happens. It's a bank-to-bank type issue, so he clearly didn't wait long enough, and that's his responsibility. Enough said on that. He did prematurely disperse.
Under regulations like Regulation Q or not Z, but Q that requires the banks to clear within 3 days or of submission of a draft?
I know that there are rules and regulations out there. But that's not what the safekeeping property rule requires. It simply requires that they be good funds. And I think for good reason we didn't want to go, the court didn't want to go into that issue because it's such a changeable, movable issue. So the fact is he did prematurely disperse from his trust account. I'll refer the court to pages 5 to 12 of the 5 to 12 of the appendix, which is a transcript of the October 20th statement where the special representative states that she made 3 calls to Mr. Lander at his home during the course of being there. None of those calls were picked up. All he got was answering machines. So there is a transcript that reflects the efforts made by the informant to contact him on that October 20th date. In November date, there is no transcript, I don't believe. He states at pages 63 and 64 of the appendix that he has not read the rules, and he hasn't read them because he assumes there are rules of reason and he practices law in a reasonable fashion. He also states on page 64 that if I had read all the rules that have been promulgated regarding lawyers and lawyers' conduct, I'd still be reading. That's a good statement to reflect what we've dealt with, frankly, and frankly a bit of a flippant attitude towards the rules, towards our office, towards this court. The fact is that I do question whether he'll make probation if this court issues probation to him, because he simply hasn't followed our directives. He's hung up on our paralegal trying to gain records, And I do seriously question it. However, the one thing I would ask is if this court deems it appropriate to put him on probation, that it do so in association with a state suspension. As you all know, you could just give him straight suspension. I certainly don't think that's warranted in a case such as this involving trust account violations. I think the panel's recommendation of an indefinite suspension with no leave to apply for 6 months is warranted under the rules, the ABA standards that we haven't touched on, but they're covered in our brief. And so I think that the panel's recommendation is appropriate. That said, if the court decides to put him on probation, I would ask it to be with a state
now,
suspension.
Now, let me ask you another. I guess it's like a $500 fine. Can't you charge it? Can we change the rules to let you charge your costs? I mean, your investigator's costs and your time expended there. Can't we make the if someone's causing these problems, make them pay for your costs?
I mean, Judge, we're adequately funded. Part of our
sure, but you
need our requirements.
You have other reasons for using.
I appreciate that, Judge. I just think that it's part of our investigative responsibilities under Rule 5 to investigate overdrafts, complaints, files that we open, and we do that as part of our duty. So, you know, we have hardworking people, and in this case, we conducted audits and found certain things beyond what was reported to us by the bank. And so I think that's just standard operating procedure in these cases. Thank you all.
Thank you. Case will be submitted.